to an inspired world. Is your heart open, listening? This is where you live. Breathe deep. Be captured by wonder. Creation song. A love song. Music for us all. The Master Designer. Exploration Films, the art of truth.
Welcome to the Exploration Films podcast. I'm your producer and host, Steve Ryder. Today's film is a glimpse into the blueprint of creation that reveals a dramatic story. A story of purpose, meaning, significance, and ultimately love, called The Master Designer, The Song. It's produced and directed by Exploration Films founder and president, Steve Greisen. And I love this quote about the film from Bill Ewing, who was a former senior vice president at Columbia Pictures. He also was producer of The Patriot, Men in Black, Spider-Man, Stuart Little. He said, "The Master Designer is an inspired documentary that gives a detailed, fact-based look at the incredible design of a cross-section of the animal world that surrounds us. From a honeybee to a camel to a cricket, the ability that technology affords us to explore these magnificent creatures and many more points to one indisputable conclusion. They must be the result of an amazing Master Designer." This is a film for everyone, but especially for families to enjoy together. It will definitely change your perspective about a world many of us take for granted. I love that quote. So, I recently had a chance to sit down with Steve and talk about this film and a few of the animals that were featured. Welcome to the Exploration Films podcast. I'm Steve Ryder, and I am here with Exploration Films founder and president Steve Greisen, and we're talking about his wonderful film, Master Designer, The Song. Steve, thanks for being back on, my man.
Well, it's great to be, you know, of course, I love this podcast because it represents so many of the films we do, and it's kind of cool to be a guest for a change, but, you know,
I'm a reluctant guest, so you're like, I don't know.
Reluctant, right?
I need to do this one?
I'm really impressed with a lot of these filmmakers, and you know, because we talk to them all the time in work. And so this is where the whole idea of the podcast even came from, because, you know, these are interesting people.
Yeah.
Some of them live all over the world, Bulgaria, Israel, South Africa, and, you know, on and on it goes. And it's just like, these are smart, interesting people, and the public would love to hear from them, especially as it relates to the story that they've created. So here we are. Good to be here.
Well, this film, Master Designer, The Song, it goes along with a theme almost of some of your other films that you've done in terms of around animals. Well, first off, I guess, talk about what the film is and then why animals.
So The Master Designer, The Song is basically has six different animals that have remarkable and stunning designs built into them, in such a way that it really challenges the whole idea of evolutionary theory at all. Plus, it's just brilliant and mind-blowing. Animals are, I think, for most people, they represent a doorway for a lot of people into the idea of God. Because animals are around all of us, no matter where you are in the world. You've got all kinds of birds and reptiles and big game and everything else. I mean, it's a spectacular world when you think about it. And I'm a diver, and then you go under the sea and you see what's going on down there. It's just stunning.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I grew up in Asia as a kid. My parents were missionaries, and I just had this love for animals, and I had all kinds of stuff. I'm lived out in this village, out in these rice paddies, and we had all kinds of dogs. I had snakes. I had two pet monkeys that rode on my handlebars. I had reptiles. Some of them horrified my parents, you know. But I always had this love for animals. And so it was kind of ironic that later in life I would end up doing films that were animal based. And Master Designer is one of those. And this particular film took 3 years to do. So it was a long journey. But I wanted to get it right because it's really a beautiful story.
So where did the idea for this film come about?
So we had done a series of animal films with kind of an in-your-face title called Incredible Creatures That Defy Evolution. And they looked, I had met this guy that was giving lectures in universities about animal designs and how remarkable and how they challenged a lot of evolutionary theory. They caused real problems for some of these ideas. Evolutionary theory has gone through all of these changes. And what we learned was, a lot of the stuff from the university level down, high school and everything, those guys are parroting a very small group of original thinkers at the very top. And these guys don't agree with each other, and they keep going back and forth on, you know, changing their ideas. For instance, you know, the old idea was the whole idea of slow evolution. So you add time to anything, millions of years to anything, and anything's possible, right? Anything's possible, because how can you challenge that? But then as that began to fall apart, they came up with this other idea called punctuated equilibrium, where everything moved very quickly. So like at a certain point, things would go really fast and evolve, right? So they keep wrestling around with all these different ideas. And, you know, so we had done this series called Incredible Creatures That Defy Evolution. And then tragically, we hit a roadblock. Our young host who was in that show was in Haiti, and if you remember a few years ago, they had this massive earthquake in Haiti, and he was killed in that earthquake. He was in a place called the Hotel Montana, which is where the only hotel any Westerner would want to stay in Haiti, and all that concrete structure went down, and he was killed. So, you know, it left me kind of trying to figure out, and that particular series really did connect with people, all kinds of people, and we did, you know, there just was a lot of interest in it. So now I'm thinking, now what? You know, so took some time off, and then I came back with The Master Designer. It really is, in a way, Incredible Creatures 4. Mm-hmm. But I came up with a different way to tell the story. And so this particular storytelling model is kind of fun because we tie animals to a history, and we look at animals that actually change the course of history. So that becomes sort of the setup as we lead into the animal. So it's been a lot of fun. It's a good storytelling model. I don't know how hard it'll be to keep it going, but, you know, it's fun.
Well, you settled on a new host, Brian Corsetti. How did you get to meet him? How did you become familiar with him?
Brian's great. You know, he's a fun guy, a really, you know, affable guy. I was looking for a host. I went down to Santa Monica, California, and I put out the word amongst the agents down there. And we had, I mean, thousands of applicants. It was overwhelming. And it was kind of at a period where the economy was down and people needed work. So apparently everybody and their brother. And of course, we needed people that sort of didn't have any complex problems in their character or in their past. And, you know, we needed somebody with a clean history. And there's a place that you can rent that where you can do auditions. So think about a big round room with a center section where all of the candidates that are auditioning.
Yeah.
And then there are doors in a big circle. And you go in and, you know, different filmmakers like us, we just rent one of those rooms and people show up in there, you know. And so we had all these people audition. I hired somebody to screen it down. And so we looked at about, I think we looked at about 20 a day for 3 or 4 days. And nothing, you know, we sent them a little script. Nothing about the script said that we were Christians. It was, I think, about the buffalo. And he walked in the door and he closed the door and he goes, "You guys are Christians, aren't you?" And I started laughing, and I'm like, he goes, "What are you doing down here? Nobody comes down here." But he sort of sniffed us out, you know, and he did a great job. We liked him, and so he was a lot of fun to work with.
Yeah.
Brought him out here. We did a lot of those stand-ups here in Colorado, and it was a blast.
Take a walk out here. take a deep breath, and look around. It's absolutely inspiring, and I can't help but be overwhelmed. Hi, I'm Brian Corsetti, and the raging question of our time is, how did all of this beauty come to be?
Well, let's get to some of those animals that you were talking about. And you said an animal that changed the course of history, the bee, the honey bee.
Well, you know, bees are fascinating anyway. Most people know some remarkable thing about bees. Some years ago, I was living in Texas, and I started raising bees. I caught a wild swarm. And I don't even like honey, but I was fascinated by bees.
You don't like honey?
Well, it's a little bit better now, but it wasn't even my thing. I was not doing it for that reason. I was doing it because I thought they were so fascinating and interesting, and I'd found this guy that had helped me, old guy who wore overalls and taught me how to do the whole thing. It was a lot of fun. But, you know, bees are fascinating creatures, and this is one of the ones where we tied the bee to history as this thing opens up. And to understand the background, so in 390 BC, when Rome attacked the Gauls, the Romans were alerted by cackling geese. So as they were scaling the walls, the geese started cackling and alerted the fact that there were invaders, and the geese essentially saved Rome. So in this story we found in 1780, George Washington and his Continental Army were waging this war of independence. And he has a ragtag group of soldiers outside of Philadelphia. They know the Redcoats are coming. They know there's an imminent attack on the way. But they're missing a critical piece of intelligence. They just don't know when it's going to happen. So there's one of their soldiers actually ends up getting this intelligence, but he's wounded and he ends up falling off his horse before he can get to George Washington. He's found by this local girl who's collecting walnuts, and he says, please take this information to General Washington. And he gave him his horse and said, go, go, go. And here come the Redcoats right behind her, and she knows something that they don't, that this whole road was lined with beehives. And she mounts his horse, grabs his stick, and beats on these hives as she starts running out of town with this intelligence. And the bees swarm and sting the Redcoats, and it ends up buying them some time. And it's a really fascinating story because it's reported that Washington said, neither you nor your bees will be forgotten when our country is at peace again. It was the cackling geese that saved Rome, but it's the bees that have saved America. So that's the setup to the whole bee segment and a fascinating piece of history, right? Who knew?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I found fascinating about the bees were two things in particular. One, the honeycomb. I'm particularly fond of this because right before Thanksgiving, I found at Costco two little trays of honeycomb for, you know, divvying up and putting on a cracker with some cheese or whatever. And I still have a little bit left. I had some last night, yesterday afternoon, and it's just so good. Oh, just breaking off a little bit of honeycomb, sticking on a fork and just putting it in my mouth and just chewing on it and... Oh, it's good.
Well, they're fascinating. They're incredible. Bees are incredible architects.
Yes.
They are dancers, which we get into in the film. And they're actually the only insect in the world that we eat what they produce. The only one. And as we looked into the bees, you know, they're just remarkable. Their wings beat at 200 beats a second. Imagine that. They clock speeds of 15 miles an hour. And when you think about getting honey, like you mentioned, it takes 556 bees flying 55,000 miles to gather nectar from an astounding 2 million flowers to get 1 pound of honey. That's just unbelievable. The queen will lay 175,000 to 200,000 eggs per year. And she's got this amazing system where the hive passes between them chemicals called pheromones. And in doing that, this intelligence reaches the queen. And so there are soldier bees, there are drone bees, there are nursery bees, worker bees. And by that report that she gets using those pheromones, she can see the complete condition of the hive. So if they need more, you know, defender bees, the whole next batch of eggs will be defender bees. Just stunning. And you mentioned the hexagon that they built. It's a six-sided polygon. It's called a hexagon. And that's really interesting because if you look at that shape, it's the strongest structure they could possibly make to store the honey. It holds the most honey, mathematically precise. It has two sides vertical, those two sides vertical are important because they have to connect to all the other ones. Mm-hmm. And then it angles back so that the honey doesn't fall out between 9 and 14 degrees. Just amazing. So it keeps the honey in, and then eventually they put a wax coat to seal it off.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable stuff.
The other one that I found really fascinating fact that you guys talked about was the bee's ability with their tiny brain that's about the size of a pinhead, if I'm remembering correct.
Yeah.
The way it's able to figure out the most efficient way to go between the flowers.
Yes. Now, this is fascinating because this was a story done by a research project done by a university in England. And they called it the traveling salesman problem. So imagine if you're a salesman and you're entering a neighborhood and you have, you know, streets and houses on both sides. So you could go down one side and cross over and up one side, or you could go
zigzag between the houses,
whatever. There's only one possible way that is the most efficient way to hit every house. Now project into a field of a million flowers, and a bee enters this field of all these flowers, and there's only one most efficient way to hit all of those flowers. Literally, as they were doing this research project, supercomputers take days to figure out these calculations. There's so many numbers. And they learned that the bees will do it every single time. Unbelievable. With a brain, like you said, the size of just a little speck.
Yeah.
God's stunning design of bees teach us so many life lessons. Each is created for a specific purpose. They are eternal optimists. Share what they've learned, and always work for the benefit of others. They are truly tiny miracles, and should remind us that so are we.
Now, Steve, you feature a lot of animals in this film, but one that I am particularly in love with, because I've been here in Colorado now almost 25 years, is the bison, the American bison. Some people call them buffaloes, but really they're bison. So talk a little bit about the bison.
Well, you know, before the 1800s, they thought there was as many as 90 million of them that dotted the American plains. You can imagine, you know, you see those films of the Serengeti and, you know, the millions of animals, 90 million animals. It was amazing. And for the Native Americans, the bison really was viewed as a gift from heaven.
Oh, yeah.
Each one was sort of a four-legged treasure trove, providing a wealth of raw material. Typical bison would provide about 800 pounds of meat, but that's just really the beginning for them. Every part of the animal was used. So the horns were used as scoops and spoons. The hide on the top of the head became a bowl. The heart was used as a sack to carry dry meat. The hide was tanned and used for shelter for their teepees. Hides were valuable for trading. Even the stomach could be used as a cooking vessel. So this animal was really a Walmart provision, if you will, for the native people, and just took care of everything they needed. Now, as the expansion of America happened and you had this move west, we know the bison were hunted by the frontiersmen. Also, of course, the Native Americans would hunt a certain number for food. They would drive them over what's called these buffalo jumps, where back in the 1800s, of course, this was pre-horse. So Cortez hadn't come from Spain yet, brought all the horses that became the wild horses. So we're talking hunting on foot. Can you imagine how dangerous this would be? And they would drive these herds off a cliff and harvest many, many animals. Multiple tribes would work together, and they'd have this giant harvest of animals, which was quite remarkable. But this hunting began to diminish their population. And not only the hunting, there was a wasting disease. And we have this wasting disease in Colorado with elk some years, kind of like brucellosis, which was a disease that would begin to kill off the animals. And so by the time it got to the mid-1800s, they went from 90 million animals down to 551 animals. almost completely gone. Wow.
Which is pretty remarkable. So what saved the bison was there was a herd out on Catalina Island, which is 26 miles off the coast of California, and brucellosis couldn't make it there. And so Yellowstone later started a program to reintroduce the bison, and they got the seed for that from Catalina.
Which is, you were just there recently.
I was just there, and it's a sort of the 70-mile-long island, a beautiful place. But then, you know, that grew, went well in Yellowstone, and now they've sprinkled back all over America. And in the West here particularly, you could see fields and fields of them. And they make incredible food and lots of good uses. So, I mean, a remarkable conservation effort. And really, the bison is really a very American animal.
One of the interesting things about the bison that were on Catalina Island is they were brought there by Hollywood.
That's right.
Because they would do westerns out there, right?
Right. No, exactly. And, you know, little did they know they would serve this enormous purpose, much bigger than the film thing. And, you know, Catalina is a great place, great grazing out there, and they multiplied and they did well.
Yeah, they were just let, once the filming was done, rather than take them back, they were just kind of left there and they bred and became this big herd.
Right. I really wrestled with, because in a lot of ways, this is a Native American love story. Because they really viewed this animal as a gift from heaven.
Yeah.
And we've always had great respect for the Native people here. And I, as a filmmaker, I was really wrestling with trying to do this well. I didn't want to turn it into any kind of cheese, sort of cowboys and Indians vibe. I really wanted to honor the Native American people and represent them well in terms of how it's shown. So we went through a lot of grimacing trying to figure out how we were going to duplicate this, because we're dealing with a time, like I mentioned before, where there was no horses. Not only that, these people just basically lived with skins, you know? So, you know, their teepees were made out of animal skins. There was no fabrics. It just was an interesting time. And of course, you know, later horses would come. And I was fascinated by the courage of these young men. They would take young men that were physically fit and really good runners, and they would drape over their heads wolf and coyote skins, and they would hide in the tall grass, and then they would drive the herd.
And the reason that they would do the wolf and coyote skins is because bison aren't afraid of wolves.
Right, exactly. And they would run and drive these animals. You know, I mean, these animals can run 35 miles an hour. So can you imagine being a young warrior out on foot, the courage you must have for the sake of your tribe to be able to harvest some animal and drive them over these cliffs so they could harvest them. The other part that I thought was fascinating was, and I really began to wonder, how could a warrior or a hunter with a simple bow and arrow or a spear take down a massive animal 10 times his size? Could be 2,500 pounds, this animal. How could that happen?
And it's one of those design things about the bison.
Totally. It's one of the design things. Every other animal has what's called a pleural lung cavity. Two lungs. We have them, right? Left and right.
Yeah.
So we can be injured in some way, have a lung collapse, and still breathe because we have two lungs. Well, not so with the bison. They have a singular lung cavity. So think about it like puncturing a tire. Just a small hole from a spear or an arrow would collapse the lung of that enormous animal, and they could hunt the animal and get it for food. Just amazing.
Another one of those design things about the bison is its four-chambered stomach.
Yes, so they're called ruminants, and so they eat rough
grasses.
Depends on where they are. You know, they can sometimes be in woody areas where there's not lush grass, where there's stubble and kind of woody substances. But with that four stomach system, it's kind of like this amazing process where the first stomach will have things like hydrochloric acid and start breaking down this matter. And then next will come enzymes and so on. And each stomach, there's another process that helps the animal to extract every bit of nutrition out of these really, in some cases, not very nutritionally rich substances. So when they eat this and then they sit down and they start regurgitating it up, chewing their cud, that's the first part. It starts mashing it up, and then it goes back in the stomach, and it starts this sort of assembly line process. It's an amazing thing. And I've always thought it was amazing that some of the largest animals in the world eat the smallest things. So when you think about it, you know, you think whales, which are the largest mammals ever, eat these tiny, tiny little plankton, right?
Yep.
Elephants eat leaves off these trees. And so it's really the mid-sized animals, sort of the meat eaters, like the lions and the
silverback
cheetahs
and tigers. Gorillas, that all they do is they eat insects and will chew on, you know, whatever it is, what sort of plant is around. And they
Isn't
just
that
sit
fascinating?
There. They spend their whole day just chewing.
And how can these massive animals be supported by this? And it's all because of the way each one's are designed in terms of how they process food. You know, the thing I love about this whole discussion is when you think about it today, we can look two directions. We can look up into space, into the stars, into the universe, and we can see more than we've ever seen before. And then we can go the other way. We can go down into the cell, into the skin, all the way into the cell and into the neurons. And, you know, and what we can now see is just mind blowing. How complex this world is that God has created.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, because all of this has happened in the last 100 years, what's the next 100 years going to reveal where we can see better? It's going to be fascinating stuff.
As an old Lakota Indian once wrote,
"The buffalo gave us everything we needed. Without it, we were nothing. Our teepees were made of his skin. His hide was our bed, our blanket, our winter coat. It was our drum throbbing through the night, alive, holy. Out of his skin we made our water bags. His flesh strengthened us, became flesh of our flesh. Not the smallest part of it was wasted. His stomach, a red-hot stone dropped into it, became our soup kettle. His horns were our spoons, his bones our knives, our women's awls and needles. Out of his sinews we made our bowstrings and thread. His ribs were fashioned into sleds for our children. His hooves became rattles. The buffalo gave us everything. Without it, we were nothing."
Well, the third animal that we wanted to talk about today is the last one that you close the film with, and that's crickets.
So this is a little bit personal for me. So growing up in Asia as a kid, the Chinese collected crickets. And to this day, you can go to a market and they have these little, they make these little bamboo cages and you can buy a cricket. And the cricket has this long history, and particularly the cricket song with China. Back 2,000 years ago during the Tang Dynasty, the ancient Chinese collected these crickets. And there was an account that we found recorded in 742 AD where it was written, "Whenever the autumn arrives, the ladies in the palace catch crickets and keep them in small golden cages, which were placed near their pillow so they could hear their song in the night." So for centuries, crickets were caught by the Chinese and put into these decorative containers. And in the spring, the insect song would tell them when to plant.
Really?
Way before clocks or anything, right? Or calendars. The song would tell them when to plant. In October, the song changed, and it would encourage the ladies to expedite the weaving of their warm clothes for the coming winter. So it was just an amazing how they had this relationship with crickets. And I ended up, along the way, when I was working on this show, I found this most amazing recording by an audio engineer that had gone out and recorded crickets right here in Colorado in his backyard. And he wondered, because the cricket lifespan is much shorter than ours, what would happen if he extended the lifespan of a cricket and basically took the song, slowed it down to represent a longer life, and instead of their high chirping, very high frequencies, these frequencies could be brought down into frequencies that as humans we could hear them all. So the engineer tried this experiment, and he slowed down the cricket song. And what you hear when you hear this is absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
And I really don't want to give it away, But it's one of the reasons this, one of several reasons that this project's called The Master Designer of the Song. Because I've always thought that all creation sings. All creation, by the way it has been made and the design around us, is kind of like a worship to God. Mm-hmm. It's a reflection of Him. Mm-hmm. And there is a master designer behind this world that we live in. It's not a happy accident. There's a message to us if we'll pay attention. Mm. And those of us, and I know you love to hike and you love to be outside. And I know when, you know, what is it about being on a trail and seeing a beautiful sunset or being in the woods somewhere, or, you know, what is it, that feeling that you get, that sense of peace and comfort and restoration of your soul you get, like communing with nature like that? And I think, because I think we've been designed to live in this world with nature. And one of the big questions I ask myself is, what are all these animals for? Why do we have only a handful of these animals for food? What are the rest for? Mm-hmm. And I became convinced that it's because that God has made us to live in this world, and in a certain way, we can know that we'll never be alone. Mm-hmm. It's a sense of community and fellowship and mm-hmm. family that God's placed us with by living the way we live.
Mm. You will hear two audio tracks. The first is the recording of the normal cricket singing into the night. And now over the top, we will add the slowed track. And in the tradition of Handel, we simply call it the cricket chorus. What lies behind the universe is no abstract. It is God, the creator and master designer himself. God has left creation as a beautiful song, a call to each human heart to leave the rebellion and be reconciled to him through his son Jesus Christ, who offers the gift of forgiveness and a way back to God. Only then can the unique melody of your life join the chorus of creation in giving honor to him.
So the next time you're drinking coffee and a deer steps into view, or a bird lands and sings you a song, just know that in this world, you're never alone.
Mm, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow. The Song is the name of the film, Master Designer, The Song. And it is a beautiful song that the crickets do when that audio engineer slowed it down. Talk to me about how you got to know him and how you found that.
Yeah, I found that through... somebody sent me something, and I thought, what is this? And I thought, you know, I always approach things a little skeptically because there's so much out there with this and that. But I found out that this audio engineer that did this recording was living down in Pueblo, Colorado. We're in the Colorado Springs area, so it's not that far.
Yeah.
So I ended up calling him.
Yeah.
And I went down to his house to meet him. He had a recording studio in his house.
Yeah.
He was married to this French woman that barely spoke very much English at all, but she was there, very gracious, very hosting. And I wanted to ask him to rehearse to me how he captured this information. And he laid it out. He laid out how he recorded it, how what we were hearing. There was nothing else on there. There was nothing added. It was just the song of the cricket. And when you hear it, it sounds like a chorus, like a choir singing. It's hard to believe, really.
It's beautiful. I assume you recorded analog because that would be able to slow it down to that kind of level. Digital is so difficult to kind of slow things down like that.
Well, you're an audio nerd, so you'll appreciate this. So he recorded it on a reel-to-reel Revox.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was able to slow that down. And he showed me how he did it. It was fascinating. And I asked him if it would be okay that we include that recording. Mm-hmm. And he was very gracious to allow us to include it. Oh. And I just think it just speaks. It really will. It's kind of a shocker when you hear it for the first time.
Yeah.
you mentally have to process, oh my God, this is real.
Yeah.
Beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Well, this film covers more than just the three animals that we talked about. It covers the camel, it covers the elk, as well as wolves. It's fascinating. It's so well done. What I love about it, Steve, is the occasional humor that Brian brings to it. It's not cheesy. It's not campy. It's, if you're a homeschooling mom, your kids will enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
So you have a segment called Science versus God. Talk about that.
So I was interested in the conflict between modern science and a belief in a creator God. Mm. We've become more secular, and where science has tended to go in a modern way is only will live within naturalism, right? And materialism. So it will only deal with what you can see and feel. And the whole idea that there could be a creator, a force behind all the stuff that we're studying is completely dismissed. And historically, that's never been the case. We started looking and we found that incredible towers of science, men like Galileo, the father of science, physics, and observational astronomy. Francis Bacon, who was considered the creator of the scientific method. The German scientist, mathematician, Johannes Kepler. Sir Isaac Newton, the greatest scientist who ever lived. Mm-hmm. Albert Einstein, Pasteur, Kelvin. And most recently, Dr. Francis Collins, who headed up the largest science project in history.
The Human Genome Project, right?
Every one of those people believed in a creator God.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea that we would exclude that is really something new. The founders of science believed that those things could be in harmony, that there could be a creator God. And then I loved what Kepler said. He basically said that God has imposed an order on this world, and as scientists, our job is to understand it. And by understanding it and learning that order, that we're thinking God's thoughts after him.
I once heard Francis Collins years ago talk about that after the Human Genome Project wrapped up. And it was something really cool to hear.
And he was one of those guys that completely changed his point of view. Once you got down to the genome project and those thousands and thousands and the amount of information in the cell, it's one thing to have a cell that's created, but the information that it carries. Once he started looking at the detail on that, he became a believer in a creator God. So science is not incompatible with God, and it did not dethrone him.
It's important to note that just because an idea is advanced by a scientist doesn't make it science. God's creation tells us another story. Fish are fish, birds are birds, and mammals are mammals. And all are created and designed with beauty and purpose, for now and for eternity.
So, Steve, what's the biggest takeaway you want viewers of this film to come away with?
Well, I think all of us love animals, from our pet dogs to cats to horses and the animals in nature. I think almost everybody loves animals. And I think the animal world is a beautiful reflection of God's heart because they're all amazing. Mm. And you could dig down on any one of these, and they're beautiful, they're amazing, they're stunning in terms of their abilities and what they can do. And I really think the animal world is sort of this big love story to all of us. And that God is trying to convey through his creation that everything has a purpose. And that in that, we do too. That, you know, we're not just randomly created for nothing. Each one of us has been created for a purpose. And the way we are created is a reflection of him. Mm. And so the idea of feeling grateful and also confident that the way you were made, your skills, the way you're wired, and all the gifts that you've been given, and we've all been given gifts, all of that has been given by God to you, to love him and to serve others. And I want people to come away with a sense of purpose, that there is a grand purpose for their life as well as this universe around us.
In the book of Revelation, the Apostle John pens a description of an amazing scene. It seems to take place after Jesus Christ's crucifixion and resurrection into heaven. It reads, "Then I heard every creature in heaven and on earth, and under the earth, and on the sea, and all that is in them, saying, To him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb, be praise and honor and glory and power forever and ever. This incredible scene of a vast array of creatures, large and small, singing praise to God was the inspiration for Handel's Hallelujah Chorus. And it is said that this scene so gripped Handel that he never looked at life on this earth the same way again.
I assume you have ideas for the next master designer.
Yeah, we got a big catalog full of them, so we'll get to it.
Steve Greisen, the film is Master Designer, the Song, available on explorationfilms.com, as well as the new streaming site you all came out with, ExploreFlix, FLIX.world. Thanks, Steve, for being on.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Exploration Films podcast. To check out this film, you can go to our new streaming service at exploreflix.world. Exploration Films has long been a pioneer and leader in the faith and family film space, and that's why we're so excited to tell you that we've finally launched our own streaming service, exploreflix.world. If you or your family are looking for amazing films, compelling documentaries, unique stories, concerts, and Christian growth resources that all support your Christian worldview, then check out exploreflix.world and get 7 days free. You can go to exploreflix.world. One other quick note, if you like what you hear, please be sure to click subscribe on this podcast app so you'll never miss an episode. For the entire Exploration Films team, I'm Steve Ryder. Thank you for investing your time with us.
That's a wrap.